This is Midday Magazine for Tuesday, October 13th. I'm Angela Denning. A bill that would create corporations for five landless Native communities in Southeast Alaska had its first hearing in the U.S. Senate last week. This comes after a similar bill had its first hearing in a House of Representatives committee this summer. KSTK's Katarina Sestarik reports from Wrangell.
The bill aims to establish Native villages in Wrangell, Haines, Ketchikan, Petersburg, and Tenneke, and allow them to organize as corporations. The Southeast towns were left out of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971 that distributed money and land to Native residents of many other communities. Senator Lisa Murkowski introduced a bill in March to settle the land claims, and its first hearing was in the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Subcommittee on Public Lands, Forests, and Mining. Leo Barlow of Wrangell testified on behalf of landless residents. He says the landless communities are not on par with those that were granted lands in 1971.
Those corporations have been able to engage in business practices. They've developed an economic generator, in some cases, to produce significant economic benefits to their shareholders that we can't because we don't have a land base to work with.
Landless residents are shareholders of the Sea Alaska Regional Native Corporation, but residents of towns with urban corporations get additional benefits. Barlow says the landless residents have been denied 44 years of business opportunities. Buck Linda Kugel represented the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council at the hearing. He says SEAC's fundamental concern is maintaining the integrity of the Tongass National Forest.
We do not believe that giving lands to for-profit corporations, whether they're native or non-native, from the Tongass is in the best interest of the region and the existing sectors of the economy.
Murkowski says it's difficult to argue that the Tongass shouldn't be touched.
These are the people who have been living in the Tongass, raising their families in the Tongass, educating their children in the Tongass for time immemorial. And so when I think about keeping the Tongass intact, I also remember the people of the Tongass and making sure that they have that access and that claim to their lands.
A Bureau of Land Management official testified that the bill would create a, quote, continual land transfer cycle in Alaska by causing more communities to ask for corporate status. Representative Don Young introduced a similar bill and chaired its first hearing in a House Natural Resources Subcommittee in June. Landless legislation has been introduced in Congress several times. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Katarina Sestarik.
Alaska is now the first state to recognize the second Monday in October as Indigenous Peoples Day instead of Columbus Day. Governor Bill Walker signed the proclamation yesterday, and First Alaskans President Liz Medicine Crow made the announcement at the Elders and Youth Conference that's happening in Anchorage.
Well, moments ago, the inaugural Indigenous Peoples Day of Alaska.
The declaration came on the heels of a similar announcement by Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz. The city now also recognizes the holiday. First Alaskans board member and former state lawmaker Willie Hensley reacted to the declaration.
This is a historic moment, considering all the trials and tribulations that our people have experienced over time. A lot of not so good stuff, historically speaking. But finally, after all these years of work by a lot of people and a lot of understanding by people who didn't know too much about our people, all of a sudden we're beginning to understand one another a little bit better.
At least nine other cities nationwide recognize the holiday. Medicaid expansion has been available to Alaskans for over a month, and 93 people in the capital city have enrolled. 263 in all of Southeast have. It's providing coverage for the uninsured, but it's also offering increased care for those who qualify with Indian Health Service. For one Juno man, that means having options to treat alcohol addiction. KTO's Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
James Referzo says he fell on hard times when he was in his 20s, and he's still paying for it now. Back then, he didn't think he had a drinking problem.
Maybe one time I'd overdo it with my addiction. Sometimes I'd drink, you know, 8 or 10 beers, and then all of a sudden, just make a dumb decision and say, hey, I can drive.
After his third DUI, he was locked up at Lemon Creek Correctional Center. Referzo is the father of three small kids. He spent 2 years away and had a revelation.
Realizing, hey, you know, this has got to stop, because the next time I get in trouble, I'm automatically going to be in jail for 5 years, and I don't want to do that, and with my kids, and you know, something had to change, and so and that's when I went to Rainforest.
He knew search was another option. That's the tribal health care organization serving Alaska Natives in Southeast. Refers it was Tlingit from the Wooshki Tong clan, so most of his medical needs are covered. But Juno Search only offers limited outpatient care for substance abuse treatment.
It's tough just to ask for help, but then when you ask for it and be told to wait, it's a little bit tougher.
At Rainforest Recovery Center, he says he was able to fill out a form and come back that same day. The center has a sliding scale payment policy. There's an overnight treatment program. Referzo opted to do outpatient. And he says things got better. He was meeting with the counselor regularly and talking about his problems.
When I got my job and everything, then I didn't qualify for the sliding scale, and I was paying 100%.
Referzo only works part-time and owes Rainforest over $1,300.
It's gone to collections now. I just got another letter saying this one's going to go to collections too. And it's like, well, I got to take care of it later on in life when I start making more money and decide to start fixing my credit.
He stopped going to Rainforest. Then he heard he qualified for Medicaid, which pays for treatment.
Did you pick your background color?
No.
Oh, well, that's a nice one anyway.
Betty Ann Boyd, Referzo's girlfriend, helped him sign up. She works at Search and has been covered by Indian Health Service and Medicaid for as long as she can remember. Medicaid covers travel expenses for medical reasons and specialized care, giving her family more opportunities.
Just the choice to have a different option to go to a private clinic, a private dental, if you're not feeling comfortable with the IHS services.
And she's glad those choices could extend to her boyfriend, Referzo. She says she's proud of the work he's done on himself. She's going to counseling too.
We're doing really good, and we've been doing really good. Who knew that we would be able to live in this trailer and have a trailer and own it? Everything is just keeps going up higher and higher.
Referzo hasn't heard back yet if he's been approved for Medicaid. Some people who've signed up have had to wait. But after November 1st, new applicants will get an instant response from the healthcare exchange that could speed up the process. When his enrollment card does come, Referzo says it'll feel good to slip it in his wallet.
For once, I'll feel like I got something in my life that, you know, that means something material-wise, because I've never carried an insurance card before. And each time I've been asked, okay, your insurance number? I never had an insurance number in my life. And so it's going to be nice to knowing that I got Medicaid and that, you know, I'm not just stuck to seeing that one person because that's the only person I can go see. No, I can go seek out other opinions, other options.
Referzo is 4 months sober, but he says it'll be nice to know he can get help when he needs it. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
Power went out in Petersburg for about an hour Monday when a small tree fell on power lines at about 8.5 miles out the road. The tree hit both the transmission line and the distribution line, so power was out all over Mitkoff Island. The power went out around 1:30 p.m., but was restored about an hour later after the borough's power and light crew cleared the line. Rains blew through the Petersburg area Sunday and Monday, with record rain falling on Monday at 2.13 inches. The rainy, windy weather came from a different system than the Hurricane Ojo weather late last week, according to the National Weather Service. Jonathan Gardner is a meteorologist in Juneau.
That was actually a second storm system that moved initially somewhat east and then north over the Gulf of Alaska. And winds were fairly strong across the entire panhandle on Sunday, especially going into Sunday evening. I actually was on an airplane flying into Juneau during that, and it was a very turbulent landing.
Actually, that was Sunday that the power was out. I misspoke there. Hurricane Ojo did send weather to the region the end of last week, though.
We had a warm, moist subtropical air mass basically streaming northeast from the Ojo system, and that led to the warm temperatures that were observed across the region on Thursday and Friday.
So even though it was two different storm systems, they had the same kind of effect for some communities. Kaufman Cove saw precipitation records for Thursday and Friday, and then again on Monday. Hurricane Ojo did send weather to the region, with Petersburg breaking a few warm day records, as did Sitka and Kaufman Cove. On Thursday, temperatures in Petersburg reached a record-breaking 60 degrees. It also broke the overnight low of 53. Records were set again Friday with a 61-degree high in the day and an overnight high of 50. Petersburg's school board tonight will elect officers and vote on new policies on naming schools and memorials in the district. The board has held work sessions to draft some new policies and will be voting on the first reading of those two. One new policy spells out a process to honor someone by naming facilities, libraries, auditoriums, and grounds. The proposed policy says requests for naming go through the superintendent, prompt the formation of a committee, and ultimately decision rests with the school board. Another policy is on temporary and permanent memorials in the schools to honor someone who has died or committed suicide. That policy addresses how the district will treat current plaques, photos, scholarships, or other memorials already in place in the schools. The board also has a long list of other policies that have been updated and will be considered in their second and final reading. Also on tonight's agenda is the election of officers for board members, a practice that happens each year after the election. The board has the same members, with three incumbents reelected to their seats last week. They'll also choose assignments for various district committees. Superintendent Erica Kluphaner will report on the new state testing tool called Alaska Measures of Progress. The board will also hear about a calendar change for the current year that will mean different parent-teacher conference dates for students in the three schools in February and March. The school board meets at 7 tonight in the Borough Assembly Chambers. KFSK will broadcast the meeting live, and we'll also talk with school board members coming up here soon on Campus Connection. That's a live call-in show today after the newscast. The construction season is wrapping up, and with that, local trail improvement projects. The Raven's Roost Trail and Cabin have reopened near Petersburg after being closed for a few months, and the Cascade Trail near Thomas Bay is finishing up work as well. Here's more on that story. Raven's Roost Cabin sits on top of a low mountain just outside of Petersburg. The cabin and the four-mile trail leading up to it have been closed for a few months as the U.S. Forest Service made some improvements to the trail. Last summer, the first half mile was put in from Sandy Beach to the service road behind the airport. This summer, the second half mile of the trail was improved from the road to the bottom of the mountain. Paul Olson runs the Cabin and Trails program for the Petersburg Ranger District, and he told me that the new section of trail is much more user-friendly.
It turned out really well. The contractor was great to work with, and the quality of work was good, and no major snafus or problems. Everything worked out really nice, and a lot of good feedback from the public so far.
Okay, so generally, what changed with the trail?
Well, the trail used to be basically like 2x14 plank, so a 14-inch wide plank. If you were lucky, it had netting on it, so you'd have some grip as you're walking, you wouldn't slip. And years ago, we decided to redesign in terms of what we wanted to see out there and what people were doing. A lot of people were hiking with dogs and walking around out there, so we made instead of just a simple 14-inch wide trail, we made, it's about 6 or 7 feet wide, a gravel trail. So it doesn't slip, it'll last a really long time. Capacity will hold, you know, you can walk side by side, you can run strollers on it, you can ride your bike on it, you can ski on it hopefully this winter, so if we get some snow.
Very cool. So that trail runs through the Muskeg to the kind of the base of the hill?
Yep.
Or the mountain?
Yeah. Yeah. So from there, it's a pretty easy grade for the most part. There's one steep pitch, but for the most part, pretty easy walking.
Now, the whole Raven's Roost Trail up to the cabin is about 4 miles?
Yeah, that's correct.
So we have the first mile complete, reconstructed, redone. What are the plans for the next 3 miles?
We have a little bit of money for next year to go do survey and design, so we'll do as much as we can, however long that money takes us, how far it takes us. And from there, we'll put together a contract, and hopefully then we'll go pursue funds to fund that. So we don't have funds lined out for that yet.
But the goal is to eventually kind of redo the whole trail.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, try to get all the way up to the cabin.
All right. There was also work being done on the Cascade Trail this summer?
Yes.
Which is over by Thomas Bay, right?
Correct. Cascade Creek Trail is one of our highest use trails. It gets a lot of outfitter guide use. Guides will come over there with people. It gets about 1,000 visitors a year. So the outfitter guides put money into a pot, basically, and we can use that for enhancement projects or construction projects. So part of that trail was funded by those funds. So the contractor started sometime in July. The work will continue next year. There's a bridge to be replaced, and there's still some additional work to be done, but they're still working on that, and they'll be out of here probably in another week or two. But the trail remains open during the whole time.
How long is that trail?
That whole trail is about 3 or 4 miles long. The section that they're working on is just about a half a mile.
Okay.
So,
how has it changed?
Similar. It's similar in terms of, it used to be a lot of what we call step and run plank, that 2x14 wide, and now it's going to be either an aggregate, like a gravel surface you can walk on, or stone steps, things like that. So it's a lot more durable, long-lasting, less maintenance, better bang for their buck kind of thing.
Okay. And then the Forest Service was kind of helping out with a trail here in town, the Bill Musson Pathway, a few weeks ago. Local volunteers kind of went after that as a service project and tried to improve that trail. And I know the Forest Service was kind of part of helping prep the trail.
Yeah.
And
so
that trail's the one from the ball fields to the
Clinkahida
housing subdivision.
Yeah, I would guess we're about halfway done with it. And
okay.
We started from either side, and we started in the middle, and we were working out.
Oh, okay.
So the turn times will be a lot shorter this time.
Is that going to be a certain day, or is it kind of an ongoing project?
Right now, we're tentatively saying the 17th of October from 8 to 11. So if anyone could come out to assist with that, anyone who's interested in trails, who goes, runs those trails, uses those trails, if you can spare 15 minutes, an hour, whatever you can spare, move a couple wheelbarrows of gravel, that'd be huge.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Paul.
Yep. You bet. Thank you.
Paul Olson is with the Petersburg Ranger District. He runs the Cabin and Trails program there. And this wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening.